Just before Christmas, on this very programme, health chiefs warned us about the pressures being faced by hospital emergency departments over the festive period. Now, those warnings, they appear to have turned into a grim reality for patients and, of course, for staff, as casualty units appear to be almost overwhelmed. Now, the latest figures confirmed by the Health and Social Care Board just after 7 a.m. this morning show that the longest wait is at Craigavon Hospital. There's a 495-minute wait, so that's just over 8 hours in Craigavon Hospital this morning. Sean McGovern is from the Royal College of Emergency Medicine. He's on the line. Good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning.
And we'll also speak to the SDLP MLA for the Upper Ban area at Dolores Kelly in just a moment. Sean, I've talked about this in this very seat in the last couple of weeks a number of times. Is this a case of the weather, of a perfect storm, pardon the pun, creating these pressures on the health service? Or is the message that you should not go to A&E unless you are very, very ill, simply not getting through?
I think this is indicative of wider problems within the health service at this moment in time. Problems identified in your programme with regard to waiting times in emergency departments are across the piece in terms of Northern Ireland. I've spoken to many colleagues who are facing very difficult times, both in Northern Ireland and in the UK as a whole. There are macro issues within the health service which need to be addressed at this moment in time in terms of the staffing, in terms of how we deliver social care and the funding of the health service, and they're felt acutely in emergency departments when people turn up. The current issues in emergency departments are not driven by the demand for people attending the emergency department with minor complaints. They're driven by sick people waiting for a bed in the hospital, and that's the issue that causes back pressure in an emergency department, causes longer waits for those with less serious illness or injury, and indeed on occasions causes delays and turnarounds of ambulances.
You might be listening this morning and thinking, you know, I was in one of those A&E departments, or perhaps you had an operation or a planned operation cancelled or postponed, 030 30 80 55 55. Sean, you tweeted yourself just over half an hour ago saying Bengoa called for transformation, recognised it was difficult to deliver in healthcare, and recognised the need for strong leadership to deliver. It is for the public to judge if they are getting that. So what's the answer to your own question, Sean?
Well, I think I was pointing out that in replying to your question about can transformation be delivered in a political vacuum, and the answer to that is Bengoa was very clear that there is a need for transformation. It's a lived experience of staff and patients in emergency departments today that there is a need for transformation. It's not going to be easy. Changes in health delivery are never easy, and we need strong delivery across the piece. We've had ministerial statements which call for co-production, delivering together, and we need our politicians back in government helping to deliver those changes.
So basically what you're saying, if we boil it down, Sean, is that because of the political vacuum, then the transformation of the healthcare is simply not going to happen, and this is just going to get worse.
The systems, you know, let's be honest about it, having Stormont back up and running is not going to be all of the solution. There are going to have to be transformational
changes. No, but it's making it worse.
Well, it is incredibly unhelpful that there's not a government in place to deliver the changes and the big ticket issues that require across the health service at this moment in time.
You know, it's not very, and I don't mean to sound like I'm blaming you, but it'll not put any kind of confidence in someone that's depending on our health service when they hear things like the Southeastern Trust, which runs the Ulster Hospital. They had to take to social media to appeal to its off-duty staff to come in to work.
Clearly, across the region, we're facing very difficult times. There is a staffing issue within nursing at this moment in time. There is a shortage of nursing staff.
We're talking to the Janice Smith, I think, from the Royal College of Nursing yesterday, and she had outlined there's 1,500 vacancies at present, and obviously that will be adding to this pressure as well.
Yeah, we're at a time that there are significant pressures on emergency departments. This is felt most acutely by nursing staff. This is obviously felt by patients as well, but in terms of nursing staff, when there are large numbers of patients waiting for a bed, then there's enormous pressure on nursing staff to care for these patients while at the same time trying to remain operational with respect to seeing patients who are coming to the front door.
The situation is so bad at the Antrim Area Hospital that volunteers from St John's Ambulance were drafted in to help relieve pressures. How common is it for something like that to happen?
Well, I think that is not common. I don't know the detail of that, but clearly those, if staff come in and can care for patients who have less serious needs and allow the staff in the emergency department, both medical and nursing, to get on with seeing the sickest patients. Our priority at this time has to be to keep the sicker patients safer in hospital.
We mentioned a few of the waiting times at the moment. So the Mater Hospital, 193 minutes. The Royal Victoria, 293. The Antrim area, 370. Craigavon, we mentioned earlier, 495. And then Daisy Hill, 30 minutes wait. Is it a case that people don't want to go and see, in some circumstances, their GP? They see A&E, Sean, as a more direct route?
I think the main issue at this moment in time, and I have to be very clear on this, is the main issue is of sick people requiring a bed in the hospital, and that's patient flow issues throughout the unscheduled care system. There are small numbers of patients who come to an emergency department who services could be delivered elsewhere if that was available to them, but that is not the issue. Telling people who are not sick to not come to the emergency department is not going to be as...
So the messages we had for weeks and weeks before Christmas of do not go to A&E if you are not really sick, if it's not an emergency, really at this point, given the situation that we're in, that's kind of irrelevant, because that's not what's happening. These are people that have to go to A&E, and yet when they get there, through no fault of the staff that are there, the facilities aren't there, they can't manage the huge numbers, the swell in numbers that need their help.
It is helpful that patients who don't need to be in the emergency room don't come, because when they do come, they do add to the overcrowding situation. So that is a helpful message. But the main issue here at the moment are the sicker patients, and the system needs reform, transformation. We have a social care system. We have to ask the difficult questions going forward regarding how are we going to fund this, you know, how are we going to actually move forward in the longer term with these issues.
Dolores Kelly from the SDLP. St John's Ambulance staff were packing groceries on New Year's Eve in Tesco's in East Belfast to raise funds, and then they're bailing out our health service a matter of days later. What does that say about our health service?
Well, it says a great deal about the volunteers in St John's Ambulance.
Of course.
They're quite the hero, but it really... I think many people have become accustomed to hearing about crisis in the emergency department and acclimatised, if you like, to long waiting times. But over the last few days, it is unprecedented, the number of people and the length of time that people are having to wait. Someone contacted me last night to say that they had been in A&E for over 6 hours. And at that stage, if anyone knows the layout of Craigavon Hospital, that the patients waiting to be seen were queued out to the shop in the front foyer. People were lying on the floor who were being sick. You know, it wasn't a case that they were turning up with a sprain fingers or thumbs or anything. They were actually being sick and had nowhere else to sit but on the floor. So really, it really was a scene of crisis and chaos.
I'm cautious that I don't want to make it sound like our health service is completely unfit for purpose, because, for example, myself yesterday, I had to go to the doctors. I rang yesterday morning for a GP appointment. I was very lucky, got it on the day, went down at about 11:30, drove to Randallstown. They sent me to Ballymena for an x-ray, went to Braid Valley. I was in the GP surgery for about 15 minutes. I was in Ballymena in Braid Valley for about 20. And in 20 minutes, I went in, I checked in, had an x-ray and left, and was on my way back to Belfast. So just to put it into context, there are certain elements of the health service which I couldn't believe how smooth it was yesterday. And I thought to myself, you couldn't get better if you went private. But then you have the other side of the scale, Dolores. You have people that are lying on the floor of A&E and they're desperate for help. And then you have the staff that are trying to cope with the huge pressure that's on them. We heard yesterday from Janice, who was talking about the increase in nurses that are leaving the profession, which is up hugely on previous years. I think 900 or so left in the last year. And that kind of equaled then the number that were coming in. It's quite a dire picture when you look at it that way.
it is, and it you know, I think we do have to pay tribute to the all of the staff from the porters, the nurses, the paramedics, the whole way through to the nurses and doctors who have been working every hour God sent over Christmas out of their vocation and their concern for other people. So, you know, amidst it all, people are still saying the nurses and the doctors, etc., have all been fantastic. They've just been coping in very distressful and stressful situations. But you're right. I mean, there's greater collaboration across government. I mean, we have to look at the staff shortages. We hear tell of the health trust spend up to £500,000 going across to India to try to recruit. Well, why don't we have ample nursing places in our own universities? McGill University, for example, is crying out for expansion, and yet we're not putting money in to that higher education element to train up the required number of staff. And we do see staff becoming demoralised and leaving early, yeah, and also leaving early and going to work within agencies and coming back, you know, within a matter of days sometimes to some of the same wards that they worked on. We can't blame staff for that. You know, and there are, I mean, it wasn't just the Bengal report.
I don't think there's no blame, let's be clear, in terms of the staff, because the huge pressures they're trying to work under, and regardless if their waiting times is like 30 minutes in Daisy Hill or if it's 495 in Craigavon, that's not down to the fault of the staff that are there, that
absolutely
are trying to do their best. Sean, we mentioned earlier the South Eastern Trust, they appeal for off-duty staff on Facebook to come in to work. Do we know, did staff respond? Is that something that has been done before by one of the trusts?
I'm not sure if it's been done before by World Trust. It is a measure that the department was under pressure, the system was under pressure, we wanted additional nursing staff to help the flow of patients. And I think it is a modern problem and it's a modern way of communicating with staff to get staff in. So it's nothing particularly special in terms of busyness asking for staff to work longer. It's just the medium that was used was different.
Yeah, it's not one of the, it's not really something that will add to kind of a job satisfaction if when you actually finally get to go home and look after your family or do have some downtime that you're then asked to come back in because the service is under such strain. 03030 80 55 55. Dolores and Sean, stay there for just a moment, please. June in Banbridge, our first call on this morning. Go ahead, June.
Oh, I was in Lagan Valley last night. 4 hours wait. Young fella sick as a dog. Just had like to give him a thing to be sick in. And another girl, she was really bad beside me. It was really bad, like, you know, so.
What do you mean by really bad? Because sometimes we have an idea in our head of what's happening, but describe to me what greeted you when you got there.
When I got there, this young fella was sitting as you went through the doors. He was just sitting there or lying on the floor, just being sick, just was really sick. And I was there for a few hours. I was seen and when the young fella was still there.
There's another element which we haven't talked about, which obviously is mentioned around Christmas time and I suppose other times as well, weekends and that, Sean, and that's the pressure that people that maybe have had a lot of alcohol to drink and then therefore the resultant issues that leads them to go on A&E and the pressure that puts on the system as well. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm talking about in general, Sean. You know, I don't want to make it sound like people are to blame, but sometimes if you have control of your own issues, if you're going in to see a doctor because of something that you have no say in, or if you're going in because you had so much beer the night before or that night that you're blocked, you fell over and cut your head open.
Yeah, well, I think I have to be clear about this. Yeah, the issues facing the health service are much wider at the moment than blaming it on a number of drunks who appear in the emergency department.
No, but surely all this adds to it, Sean.
I accept that it adds to it. I fully support the comments of that lady. We have no idea that man who has been sick was anyway alcohol related.
No, and we're not. We're talking in general terms. We're not talking about that man in that hospital.
Yeah, you know, to be frank, alcohol peaks at certain times of the week in terms of from the early hours of Sunday morning. There's a peak number of presenting emergency departments, but overall they're relatively small in the background and are not the issue that has brought. Present situation.
Dolores Kelly, it looks or sounds more and more like really the only solution will be a political one, in that someone steps in, there's maybe more funding or there is something done to try and change the course that we're on. We never hear of things getting better.
Well, I mean, I can't dispute that. I mean, political leadership is required. Political decisions have to be made. And
so where's that going to come from?
Civil servants. Well, it has to come from parties getting around and getting an agreement to get the executive up and running again. I was out doing my grocery shopping over Christmas and I met a GP who said to me, what about the equality needs of people who are ill? You know, he was very angry that he saw the health needs as trumping any other situation.
I know, I get that, Dolores, but this is where we get into this roundabout, and this it's like a big soup, which you go round and round, and this the suggestion is always that we need to get back around the table and we need to get talks. It doesn't seem to have worked so far, and some of the, well, let's talk about Sinn Féin, for example, they would say, whereas they are not putting, you know, health above or below anything else, they're saying they are standing up with their red lines for example, equality for gay people or for the Irish Language Act, and that they feel like that, you know, by bypassing that and giving up on that, they are denying the voters what they put them in that position for in the first place. Same for Sinn Féin, who, you know, you could say their red line is the fact they don't want an Irish Language Act, etc. The DUP, sorry. So when it comes to that, we then just get back into this circle of blame. And then the people that are going to A&E today, that are going to, for example, Craigavon, they still have a 495-minute wait.
Well, you know, the two big parties both have to eat humble pie, both of them. Both of them have got this into this situation by their various red lines. And, you know, the public pressure on them has to dictate to them that they need to get back around the executive table. You know, and let's face it, the executive wasn't pulled down because of access to equal marriage or access to Irish Language Act. These have become subsequent red lines. So, you know, the two parties need to take a long, hard look at themselves and really start looking at the needs of the people and putting the needs.
They would
of
say
all
they're doing that,
first.
Though.
Well, they're not. They're looking at their constituent parts who voted for them. They're not looking at the needs of everyone.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. John in North Belfast. Good morning, John.
Funny, there's a noble virus going around, particularly the youngsters.
A virus, you said?
Yeah, there's an ovovirus, that's sickening vomit and diarrhea bug.
Well, I know that the public health agency has been urging people to have their flu vaccine, and we've heard also in terms of strains that are seen in Australia that are apparently in the UK now.
Cold, flu-like symptom bug going about as well. Now, what I'm saying is, from Christmas until Tuesday, all the GPs were closed, which left the community out there, nowhere else to turn but A&E.
Well, you've got your out-of-hours doctors. I'm not sure exactly if every GP surgery was closed for that period of time, but let's say that they were. Surely there's the out-of-hours GP as well.
The out-of-hours GP is swamped. They're not. It's not the same as going to your local doctor, so maybe it's time for the GPs, because most of them work in practices, is to split the holidays and open the GPs over the Christmas period, because this happens every year.
So you think that the GPs over Christmas shouldn't close for as long? Is that what you're saying, John?
Well, most of the GPs is practices, so there's several doctors within the building. So their holidays should be staggered, so the GP service is opened. All year round.
You heard what Sean said there a moment ago in terms of the majority of people that are going through A&E are people that need to be there. You know, the message for many in terms of don't go unless you're in emergency has got through, and therefore it's not a case of people are turning up on A&E because their GP is not open or because they can't be bothered going to the GP. They're turning up on A&E because they need to be there. It's an emergency and that's the service they need to take up on. So, you know, it kind of contradicts what you're saying, John.
Well, I personally believe differently than that, Fanny, because this happens every year and these bugs come around this time of the year.
Okay.
Every year.
All right, John, thank you. Alex in Lisburn. Alex, go ahead, mate.
No, I was just ringing up to say, this all boils down to basically to the politicians now able to agree, and it comes down to Sinn Féin and, you know, and the human, and they're digging their heads in over rights and the Irish language. I mean, this all started, I was open enough to...
How is that their fault, though? How does this boil down to Sinn Féin?
Well, Sinn Féin aren't going back in the government.
You're saying that it's their stance on Irish language. So some people might say, and I know that it sounds like I'm defending them, but they might say, well, it's maybe the DUP stance on the Irish Language Act that there's a stalemate on both sides there. So
the original point I made when anyone rang up was that I could see the logic in having some form of Irish language provision, because you have it in Wales, you have it in Scotland. But when you see how Sinn Féin are prepared to dig in, you see how Sinn Féin are prepared to have, and it's not just the health, there's education, all the government departments are all in difficulties, and they're prepared to bring that about so they can get what they want. I'm thinking now, if you had a Sinn Féin health minister and you had a bill, you had a potential spend on more hip operations.
We've also had DUP health ministers, UUP health ministers.
Yeah, I know, but actually the Sinn Féin one in particular, the Sinn Féin policy in health was not to use private medicine, was not to use private provision. One of the ways of getting rid of the waiting list was to use private medicine and to spend money
Sinn Féin
on private operations. Sinn Féin's policy was not to do that. Michelle O'Neill was quite clear about that.
They were against doing that, but they did to help clear waiting lists.
The original point I made was this. If you had, I'm wondering now, if you had a bill for more signs, more Irish language signs, are a chance to get rid of wait lists and hip operations. Which would
this is part of the problem, then, Wallace, isn't it? That when we try and talk about issues like this, maybe it's the way it has to be, but it comes back down to DUP Sinn Féin, or you could just really call a spade, and it says it comes back down to orange and green, who you voted for. And yet, once again, I don't mean you, Alex, but I mean in general, then you still have people in, for example, the Antrim Area Hospital waiting 370 minutes. So we can talk and say, oh, it's DUP's fault, it's Sinn Féin's fault. But yet, it doesn't get us any further. It doesn't move us away. So what do we do, Alex?
Well, maybe maybe the answer is direct rule. I mean, I'm lying in bed. I have a bad back at the minute. I'm more or less housebound.
And have you gone to your doctor, Alex?
I'm waiting to see the consultant. I was even to get a scan just before Christmas. I was told, my wife was actually told the emergency scan was something like 2 months. Now, she made a few more phone calls and she managed to get a scan, an emergency scan. I'm now waiting to hear where I'm going to see the consultant to see what it says about the scan. So I'm in the system at the minute, and I was at cash and myself just before Christmas, because the pains were in around my chest and people were worried in case it was something to do with the heart, and luckily it wasn't. So I know exactly, I'm ringing as a patient myself.
Yeah.
But the point I make is this here, if we do get power back to Stormont, I'm wondering, which is the onus on Irish language signs, or is the onus going to be on provision of healthcare?
Okay, Alex.
And for the way Sinn Féin are holding all the ransom at the minute, I would suggest it's going to be on the provision of Irish language.
They would say that they're not holding anyone to ransom.
Yeah,
they are standing up for what they're,
and
the people have voted
the
for them.
And
they might also say, Alex, that the DUP have had the longest red line in that there's been no Irish Language Act for the last 20 years. And this goes back to that point, Alex. We go round and round in circles, and it doesn't help then, for example, today's topic, the waiting times in A&E. Let's go to Bill in Lisburn. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not sure that conversation will have helped Alex's back at all. I hope I haven't angered him. Go ahead, Bill. What do you think?
No, I think the answer is to have direct rural ministers who can take unpopular decisions, i.e. implementing that latest health report, without having to stand for the, have to worry themselves about being re-elected by the local population, because these reforms will be unpopular, but they can take those decisions and more freely than local politicians.
It's decisions like that and other decisions which could be and are unpopular here, for example, water charges.
Yes.
It's things like this that I think sometimes maybe we have a romantic memory of what direct rule was like, and then you have to remember that Sinn Féin have said that they will not stand for direct rule. So where does that leave us, Bill?
Well, I mean, what do they mean by they won't stand for it? I mean, they've withdrawn from government anyway, or you could argue that both have withdrawn from government. So what are they going to do now? What do they withdraw from in protest? They've withdrawn from the National Parliament at Westminster. They've withdrawn from the local parliament.
What does it say, though, if power is totally taken away from here? So if it is direct rule and then our parties here, in terms of having MLAs in Stormont, are irrelevant, do you think that could have a negative effect on life here if you're a resident of Northern Ireland?
Well, certainly. I'm a resident of Northern Ireland. I've lived here for over 40 years.
But what I mean is if people are making decisions that don't live here, they don't really have that local connection to here. They don't live here. They live in London, for example. They're direct rule ministers, and they're making decisions about our health service, about different aspects that directly impact our daily lives.
Yes, but what you need is people who are capable of making impartial decisions that are right, in inverted commas. So,
would you put a timeline on direct rule in terms of how long that should last, or should it just be for the foreseeable?
Until the local parties can still talk to each other and go round and round in circles, which it seems to me. So, just as long as is necessary.
Okay, Bill. Thank you, Carl in Antrim. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, and I texted in what to me is now the absolute clear logic in all of this, which is anyone who has voted or supports Sinn Féin or the DUP, anyone who supports or votes for either side, Sinn Féin or DUP, has absolutely no right to complain about the queues in our hospitals. It's as simple as that.
Well, that's an interesting point, Carl. So if you voted for them and they say they're standing up for your rights, let's talk about the Irish Language Act, for example, if the fact that it's to be or not to be implemented.
Or whatever else.
If you support them on that basis, then do you have a right to be upset at the extended...
Don't. You don't. You absolutely do not, on either side.
But we're allowed to have multiple policies or agendas that we want our politicians to uphold for us, are we not?
Well, yes, but they are complaining about the outcome of all of that, which is these queues in hospitals and other problems, other severe problems that we're suffering from. And it's their own fault. It's as if, and I've thought about this a great deal, it's as if the bulk of the people of Northern Ireland are lemmings. It's almost suicidal.
Let's remember as well, Carl, that there are problems with the health services throughout the UK. It's not just Northern Ireland. I know in terms of waiting times, it doesn't make good reading, but it's not just here.
Yes, but at least across the water, England, Wales and Scotland, the politicians are trying to do something about it.
Okay, Carl, thank you. I'm just going to move on. We're going to take one more call on this and then we'll take the news. Edward and Lauren, go ahead, Edward.
Good morning, Teddy Vinnie.
Good morning.
I was listening to your comment you're saying about the flags issue, and it always goes back to the green, white and gold and the red, white and blue. And personally speaking, I think people need to have a second thought on this here, really, because people are waiting on hospital lists, et cetera, and that doesn't help these people. But the reason I believe that they're wanting the Stormont government up and running again, have you ever heard it? You remember it was called some time ago the gravy train? Well,
I've heard that phrase before, yes.
Yeah, well, I think...
I've heard it used in here, never mind in Stormont.
Stormont, and I think it's to save the gravy train. And as far as I'm concerned, they should pull the gravy train into the station and park it.
Okay.
And go back to direct rule. You might have said what you think. A man told me one time, do you see if you go to the doctor and he gives you a prescription and you get the medicine and it doesn't work, do you go back for the same prescription? I don't think so. So, but yet people keep going back to these people and voting for them and they're letting them down. And it's time they were out of office, in my opinion.
Maybe it comes down to what you're voting, what's in your head when you're voting for them.
Yes, I
and I mean all the parties. I don't just mean the two main.
I don't vote for them.
Was that the answer?
No, I don't vote for. I don't vote for any of them.
Any? You don't vote for any politicians?
No, I do vote.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I vote for Jim Allister.
Okay.
And but say people need to wise up and don't vote for these people.